Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Remember this. Timeless. My daughter loves this. In 1998, this song was number one, and Bewitched were on top of the world. More hits follow, TV appearances, albums, tours, and every young one was wearing double denim just to be like them. And then in 2002, they split. Edele Lynch joins me now to tell me about life after being in one of the most popular girl groups of all time, getting back together, and her plan to be an actress. Edele, you are very welcome to the show. How are you, Mrs.?
Jennifer, how are you doing? I'm good. How are you?
It's great to have you. Can I ask you, how do you feel when you hear that song? Do you ever get sick of it?
Sometimes I do. There was a period of time where I was so sick of it. I was tired of singing it. And then I did this pantomime, and the rest of the pantomime actually sang the song, and I wasn't in the scene, and I got to sit back and kind of watch, and I suddenly looked around me and understood what the audience got from it. So from that day, I sort of learned to appreciate it again.
And it's timeless. I mean, my daughter is six, and it's one of her favourite songs. It's crazy.
Really sweet.
I know.
It's really sweet. So I was only sent a video yesterday of a little 2-year-old who was big into it. The first song she's kind of heard and listened and reacted to. And it's just so nice.
It's lovely.
Funny,
it's lovely.
You just don't have to think.
Little did you think at the time.
I know.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's go back to that time and just remind us how big you guys were.
Do you know, we did so well. We didn't expect it ourselves. We very innocently went into the music industry just because we wanted to sing, because we wanted to perform. And I remember when we were released C'est La Vie, we were kind of hoping for maybe a top 40 record, if we were lucky, top 20. And in the midweek, when they called to say that was number one, like, we couldn't even compute what they were saying because it was just ridiculous. Then we followed that on, and we had 3 other number ones in the UK, so 4. We had a couple of number ones in Ireland, and they were top of the charts for weeks on end, some of these songs, and selling hundreds of thousands in a week. We then kind of had the top 5 album, and we traveled the world. We were in 3 countries every day. Sometimes we were in 3 different countries on that specific day.
Sounds exhausting.
It was exhausting, but it was super, super fun. And we cracked America. No one was cracking America at the time. So somehow these 4 little girls from Dublin did it. Well, Sinead's not from Dublin, actually.
And how old were you at the time?
We were all kind of between the ages of 18 and 21.
Okay, so very, very young. Yeah. Now, looking at what girl groups go through now with trolling, are you a little bit relieved that you were around before social media?
I think we're really lucky. I think I remember at the time, if anything sort of negative was in the magazines or the paper, I remember finding it quite hard to deal with that myself. I'm not quite sure how I would have done it with social media at the level of trolling that they get. It's horrendous, really.
Even with quite a, you know, showbiz family, I mean, Shane being in Boyzone, even with all that support, you still would have found it difficult?
Do you know what? I think as human beings, I don't know about you, but I find that we tend to focus on the negative more than the positive. And if you have 9 positive things said to you, you hear the 1 negative that was said, and that's what carries you around for the day.
And especially at that age, it's a vulnerable age, isn't it? You know, between 18 and 21, you're young, you have this overnight success that is just a whirlwind. There's a lot going on, I suspect.
Oh, there really is. I mean, being a teenager is hard work anyway, isn't it? And then when you're in the watchful eye of millions with opinions after opinions, it's difficult.
How did you handle that? How did you handle fame at the time, do you think?
I think we just took it every day as it came, and I think that was the way to do it. We didn't look out too far to see exactly maybe how famous you might have called us or how great we were doing. And our family is really down to earth as well. So your family and your friends keep you down to earth. And the 4 of us kept each other down to earth as well. None of us kind of, you know, bought into the bravado of what we were. Mm. And we still are to this day, just those 4 young girls from Ireland who were really, really lucky. Really lucky.
Well, you worked hard, and hard work pays off. Let's talk about your ups and downs, because you split then in 2002. Do you remember that decision? Why and how it came about?
Yeah. So basically the record the record industry was changing face at the time. I don't know if you remember this company called Napstar, and everybody started to rip off music and they were getting it for free. So basically the music industry just couldn't physically support being as big as it was. So each record company were all kind of combining together, which made the record industry much smaller than it ever was. And they physically couldn't hold on to everybody. So we were one of the bands that got caught in those mergers and let go. Now we were let go on, gosh, I think it was like a double platinum selling album, our second album, which is crazy because people just don't even do those kind of numbers and sales anymore. So to look back on it, it was just crazy.
So it was probably shocking at the time, but did you have a post-Bewitched plan?
Not at all. I mean, we didn't know it was coming. It was really, really sudden.
Yeah.
We were actually planning our third album. The first single, I was in America with my twin, waiting for the call to say, right, you need to leave America and come to South Africa, because the video was supposed to be recorded for the first single from the third album that week. And instead, we got an entirely different phone call, and we were called, and we were basically said that the record company was letting us go and that it was all over. So there was no plan. There was no time to think ahead of where we were going to go after that. It was like, oh, because we've planned out our next year already, but you're telling us today that that next year doesn't exist. So then you go from there into the kind of heartache of it, really, and trying to, I guess, trying to deal with that grief and that loss. So then you don't come up with a plan then either. So you just suddenly realize you're kind of lost down the line going, oh, what am I doing and where am I actually going, you know?
How long does that last for? Is that months? Is that years?
I'm going to say it probably lasted for a number of years, just in different phases throughout.
Yeah.
And I was quite lucky, actually, because I started to write for a company called Xenomania at the time, who were writing for like the likes of Sugar Babes and Girls Aloud, etc. And I loved my time there. And I threw myself into writing for other people. But all the while, every time I had a song placed with somebody else, I was devastated and kind of jealous, going, I just want it to be mine. I just want to come back,
course,
you know.
Of course. Yeah. You've been through a lot of ups and downs in the last few years. You invested your money, but between the recession and the pandemic, the investments didn't work out as you hoped. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Celtic Tiger kind of came along and had a bite out of me, I think. Which many, many people went through the same thing at the time, but it's very difficult because I guess we'd earned quite a bit of money being young, and I was set. I was kind of set for even looking forward to having a family, etc. And then I invested the money in the property, and then the property all kind of crashed and all fell down, and all my finances went with it. So very difficult losing it all.
Yeah, I can imagine. And you moved to the UK with your kids following your marriage breakup. You said that your sister, Tara, is it, said that, come over here and we'll pick up the pieces together.
Yeah.
Because
Tara's been my hero.
Yeah,
really, really
I read that.
Say.
Because your family were in Portugal. All your other family kind of live in the UK. So you didn't really have anybody to turn to for that kind of support here. And so tell me about your sister being your hero.
Do you know what it's like? When you, I mean, at this point, I'd lost my financial situation, was in dire straits. And then my marriage went through turmoil. And then we separated at that point. And I was left as a single mom with three children. Now, at this point, I was incredibly depressed, incredibly down. My mental health was really, really struggling. And I just couldn't see the wood for the trees at all. And I didn't know how I was going to get out of it without support and without help. It's like, how do you do that? And it's also very hard to reach out for help, especially when you're incredibly low and maybe saying or doing things that people wouldn't necessarily understand. Like I went through a lot of kind of self-harm and stuff like that. And it's very hard to reach out at the time and tell people that, because that is just an element of you trying to cope. My older sister, Tara, she used to visit Ireland quite a bit. And she just said to me, she was like, look, just come to England and just let me pick you up and let me help you. And she really did. She just kind of scooped me up and emotionally held me and also physically held me and gave me the time and the space to just find moments that I needed to just choose to be strong again and just to be able to see to hang on to the light, I suppose, that was ahead. Because there's always a light and there's always a choice. But when you're snowed under and you don't have the space to find that light, you just need someone to help you find it. So thank God for her.
There was a heartbreaking piece in the paper this morning where you talked about down and shots of vodka one morning to cope with your marriage breaking up. And you mentioned it there, just the turmoil that you were going through. I mean, that must have been a really dark place to be in and then have to open the door and look after these three little faces looking up at you, kind of asking, what's next? I mean,
I know. Where are my grapes?
Yeah, did you feel like you had to put on a bit of an act all the time for them to stay strong 100%. For them? Yeah.
100%. And I really look back on those moments and thank God that they were there, because I had to do that.
Yeah.
Not put on the act, but because I had to actually get up and take the next step forward for someone else if I couldn't possibly do it for myself at that moment. So I do thank God that they were there. But they were some incredibly dark times. And, you know, the girls and I know this is all coming out at the moment because we've done this podcast, The Bewitched Girls and I, called Starting Over. And our reason for doing it is because we're normal people like everyone else. And we all go through these kind of things. And we've been through so many losses ourselves, whether that be our career, our money, our relationships. We've been through kind of most of everything between the lot of us, and we just wanted to be open about it and kind of help people to know they're not on their own with this, and we're all in the same boat. And in those moments when you're behaving that way, like, I thought I was crazy. I was like, I think I'm crazy. I don't think anyone would ever understand how I'm feeling or how I'm behaving, and just felt really alone and didn't understand that other people may be feeling that way. And I think we want to break that kind of understanding for people and just say, reach out, speak, talk. And I think if I'd have spoken to people and leaned on people and wasn't so afraid of actually how I was feeling or how I was behaving in those moments, that I may have set myself free from a lot of the heartache that I actually continue to have.
You and Sinead have an interesting story. Sinead, obviously, I know from dancing last season, because unfortunately you fell out for a long time. And I'm interested in this because we talked about the impact of friendships and the breakup of a friendship and the impact that can have on someone. So you fell out for a long time, but how did you get things back on track, and how are you now?
Yeah. And it's funny, really, because our fallout, there wasn't anything specific that actually happened that made sense that we should fall out. Mostly, I think it came down to, genuinely, I look back at my relationship with Sinead, and it was like a marriage without the sexual side of it.
Yeah.
But it was almost like a marriage breakup. And I think we just couldn't have kept that level of commitment up to each other. But at the time, we didn't realize that. And it kind of just got all a bit murky and dirty in the waters and just got a bit messy between us, and really, really hard to communicate that with each other and figure out what it was in the moment. And we couldn't figure out what we needed or not from each other until we actually took that time apart. Now, because there was heartache involved in it, losing that friendship, we probably spent way more time apart than we should have. And I didn't know we were ever going to be friends again until the big reunion.
Happier times, the big reunion 2012 for a reality TV series that you said no to for nine months.
I know. I just kept pushing it back because I was like, I just don't know if I want kind of
to go back.
Basically, I didn't know if I wanted to go back. I didn't know if I wanted my children subjected to the attention that we can sometimes get. I didn't know if I wanted to face Sinead really and kind of feel that heartache. But to be honest, we weren't long in each other's space before we realized we don't even need to look at this or talk about this. Let's just find a new us. And we have. And actually, you know, we thought we'd never have that kind of intense relationship again. But I literally call her at 9 a.m. every morning. She's my best friend. No matter what I want to say or do, she's always on the other end of the phone. I will call her probably after this.
She might be listening. She's an unbelievably calming soul, I find.
Yes, she is.
Isn't she?
I think I'm really, really lucky to have her. We literally put the world to right most days, no matter what. I'd say if anyone was listening, they'd be like, how are these two still speaking about anything?
Well, that's great to hear. That is great to hear. Yeah. And what did it feel like? So you eventually said yes to the reunion. You were back on stage. What did it feel like to be back on stage together singing the hits? What was that like?
It was actually unbelievable. I remember when we were to do the Hammersmith Apollo, that first stage presence after we'd been 12 years, I think, apart. Mm. And we were so nervous backstage, like full of nerves, the four of us, not knowing how it was going to turn out. But I kid you not, the second we stepped out onto that stage and we heard the music play and the audience, it was just like no time had disappeared at all. And there was no thinking about it, had no nerves at all. And it was just like, of course, this is totally meant to be. And it was just amazing. It was kind of like breathing again. It was really, really beautiful.
That's amazing. And this podcast sounds amazing as well. But can I ask you, how are you handling life in a pandemic? Because bills need to be paid and you need to keep busy and there's no gigs at the moment.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I've been really down to earth about this whole thing and realised there is no money. I live in the UK and there's no support over here for our industry either. So I can honestly say I went and got myself an admin job and a financial firm. And it's been great for me because I've got the money that comes in the door. I pay the bills. I'm not being unrealistic, spending everything from my savings, etc. So it's just, yeah, that's what I'm doing and meditating like a lunatic.
Are you?
Yeah, yoga and meditation, an hour every morning, 40 minutes in the evening, and just
that's impressive.
Keeping my mental health in place. And the kids come and join me in the morning sometimes and stuff like that as well. So,
But you're a talented songwriter. Are you making any new music at the moment?
Well, it's such a bad admission, actually. But when this whole pandemic started, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to have so much creative time.
Like, yeah.
And I haven't done a thing. I was really uninspired creatively, I have to say. It's been a really difficult space to try and find creativity. So I've not done any of it.
I'm getting a lot of text in. I just want to read some out. So great to hear Adele being so open and honest. I am a lifelong Bewitched fan and cannot wait to see them perform soon their songs.
Me too.
Just put your either can I. When is that going to happen? When do you predict that we'll see that happening?
Oh, gosh. Well, our first gig is in the diary for July 2nd of this year in the UK. Whether that comes off or not, who knows?
Yeah.
And who will be there and how can they be there? God only knows.
Well, please, God. And finally, as I said before, you're from a very musical family. I mean, your sister was in Buffalo G. Shane is in Boyzone. What about your kids? What about your kids? Have they inherited that talent or are you putting a stop to that straight away?
Oh, my gosh, right. Do you know what? I'll never stop my kids doing what they want to do. And if that's following in my footsteps, then I've got a heap of groundwork behind me that I can keep them safe from and kind of grounded with. But at the moment, my eldest daughter wants to go into race car driving. So she does her first season this summer.
Stop it!
JFCC officials, yeah. So she's been tearing cars around kind of my friend has a garage and he's got a big space out the back. So she's been tearing cars around there and learning handbrake turns, etc. for this last 6 months. So she's excited for that.
Is she watching Formula One on Netflix?
Yeah, she loves it. That's what she wants to ultimately do is head towards F1. She's like, I want to be the woman in the F1 beside all the men on the grid. It's like, well, you
good
go,
honor.
Girl.
Good
so
honor.
So I'll help those dreams and see what happens. My youngest daughter wants to be a horse rider. So she kind of has a horse with her best friend. Mm. They like adopt this little horse. So she's with the horses 4 and 5 days a week. And she probably will do something with horses because she's a bit of an animal whisperer.
Aww.
And my son Harley, he's got super, super brains. He goes to grammar school now in September. He doesn't yet know what he wants. Big into football, but I think he's going to do something with his brain. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know what that is yet. So some kind of super scientist. He wants to discover how we really time travel.
Oh, wow. He will be okay. I wasn't expecting those answers. Phenomenal. Yeah. Well, listen, it sounds like you're doing a great job all around, but you're definitely doing a great job with those kids. Adele Lynch, thank you so much for the chat. And I just want to tell people that they can check out the podcast. It's called Starting Over. It's really, really worth the listen. Thank you so much. Best of luck with everything. And we
Thanks
have
so
to say, it'd be rude, absolutely rude not to play a Bewitched tune. Here is Roller Coaster. Enjoy. Thanks so much, Adele.
Thanks a million, Jenny. Nice talking to you. Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.